What's up, y'all? This is Tony Powell, and you're listening to Powell to the People, episode 17, Election Eve 2018. Last week, I said I was broadcasting from Rebel Base One on the ice planet Hoth. Star Wars fans know what I'm talking about. If you didn't watch Star Wars, just imagine me out somewhere in some undisclosed location. It could be the Batcave. In any event, this will be the last podcast before maybe a change in the country. It's sort of like, I feel like at this point, I feel like that guy sitting in the bunker out in Alamogordo, New Mexico. History buffs know what happened there. Alamogordo, where they tested the first atomic bomb. And so you're in this concrete bunker and you're counting it down and you're watching off in the distance. You really have no idea what's about to happen. You have no idea what you're about to unleash. You have no idea of the impact, the magnitude of what happens next. You really don't. You just know that in about 5-10 seconds, some shit's about to go off and it's about to be real. It's about to be big. At least you hope it is. And that's how I feel right now. You know, less than 12 hours before the polls open. I guess it's about 12 hours. I mean, I don't know what time the polls open, but I mean, it's, evening here in New York. So in another 10-12 hours, people will be going to the polls and they'll be casting their votes. Hopefully casting their votes. And we'll see. I was thinking this today as I was riding the car, I was thinking, I said, growing up, you have all kinds of contests. I'm a very competitive person. I come from a very competitive family. My brother and I are very highly competitive, ridiculously so. My father is also highly competitive, and when we were kids growing up, we competed at everything. Two of my other cousins that you've heard on this podcast before, Keith and Derek and my brother Mark, we used to play Monopoly games. I mean, do or die Monopoly games, like marathon sessions, hours on end, trying to beat the brakes off of each other. Cause, we don't like to lose. And that's, I think, where politics is right now. Politics has become a zero sum game. It's not even about, maybe I'm both sidesing it. I hate people that say, well, both sides do it. But it seems that for the right, for the GOP, they want to win at all costs. They don't give a damn how it looks, how it sounds. They don't care if they get Russian help. They don't care if they have to suppress your vote. They don't care if they have to kick you off the polls. They don't care if they have to gerrymander your district so to the point where every seat that they own is practically safe and you have to win super, super landslide style majorities just to compete. They don't care about that. And it's unfortunate because really good competition means that you're going to have two people who give it all they have, and there'll be a winner and there'll be a loser, and you can live with the results, because in a fair contest, everybody gave what they had, and some people won, some people lost. I mean, as a sports fan, I've watched some of my heroes lose. And as a child, it was brutal for me to watch Muhammad Ali lose to Joe Frazier. I was like, oh my God, how could this possibly happen? I was little, but I remember being an Ali fan and I couldn't stand the idea that Joe Frazier beat Ali. Still can't stand it. As a kid, I used to be a Cowboy fan. I grew up in New York and rooted for the Dallas Cowboys. And a lot of kids that grew up in New York in the 70s rooted for the Dallas Cowboys primarily because the Giants and the Jets sucked. After 69, there was no more Jets team. And the Giants were just really, really bad until the end of the 70s. But by that time, we were all Cowboy fans. And I was a Cowboy fan and I watched, as I said, me and my competitive brother, Mark was a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And so it would happen that the Cowboys and the Steelers played in two memorable Super Bowls and the Cowboys lost twice, two games, 3 years apart by a total, I guess, of less than 7 points, fewer than 7 points. So I had to eat that. That was very, very tough. Then a couple of years later, You know, I was my childhood hero, Roger Staubach, retired, and they replaced him with this guy, Danny White. And the team was pretty much intact and still good, but just not good enough to defeat Joe Montana and Dwight Clark with the catch. I remember that. And then somewhere in the 80s and 90s, 80s, I just stopped being a fan. After the team got sold to Jerry Jones, I was done with the Cowboys. And I had started rooting for other interests. I started rooting for different teams and just players in general. I stopped rooting for teams so much as I started rooting for individuals. So in 1983, I was down in Virginia, and everybody in Virginia, University of Virginia, was a Washington Redskin fan. I don't know how it is that people that live in Virginia and northern North Carolina are Redskin fans. I don't get that. And I certainly couldn't root for the Redskins, having had been a Cowboy fan for all those years. I hated the Redskins, but I also hated the racist name of the team. I just couldn't understand how Washington, D.C., a predominantly black city, a chocolate city, as it were, could root for another oppressed people, you know, root for a team named after another oppressed people, a racist term for those oppressed people, for Native Americans. Hated that. And so I took great glee in telling all these Virginia Redskin fans and all these Maryland Redskin fans and all these Washington, D.C. and Redskin fans at the time that I hated the Redskins, and I hoped that the Oakland Raiders beat the brakes off of them, and I started rooting for the Raiders. Just win, baby, Al Davis. And so I was all on board with Marcus Allen and Howie Long in that era. And then later on after that, I guess, you know, came back to my New York roots. The Jets were suddenly relevant again. They had the New York Sack Exchange, and I said, well, I'm a New Yorker, and I can root for the Jets. Go Jets. And after the Jets started sucking again, I went back and forth. I found that I was a big fan of the Philadelphia Eagles and Reggie White and Randall Cunningham. I rooted for those guys. I also rooted for you know, as Magic Johnson came into the league, I became a huge Laker fan. Even though I grew up as a Knicks fan, I started rooting for the Lakers. But I love Bernard King on the Knicks. I root for individuals. I started rooting for individuals because I thought that if the individual had a compelling story, then it made rooting for the event exciting. So I love Magic Johnson. Rooted for him. And that's how I kind of approached this midterm. You know, New York as a state is blue. It's going to stay blue. It's been blue. Cuomo will probably win the governorship again. We're going to have a Democratic mayor, and there will be Democratic representatives from the city all over, except for Staten, Alabama, where they're going to vote for somebody Republican, I'm sure. So there's no compelling story here for me in New York. But I look around the country, and there's some great rooting interests. There are some great compelling stories, players, if you will, that I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for Andrew Gillum down in Florida. I think it would be amazing, not just for Florida, because he seems like he's I like this guy. He seems like he'd be great. He'd be a great presidential candidate. But I think it'd be great for the state of Florida, a former slave state, to have a black governor. A state that is truly, truly, even though there's parts of Florida that are just as Alabama as Alabama is. I mean, that western part of the state, like out in Pensacola and the Panhandle, that's Alabama. I don't give a damn what nobody says. That's Alabama. And Jacksonville might as well be in Georgia. Is that southern? But then you get to the central part of the state, you know, in Tampa and Orlando, and it's kind of hip. It's kind of, you know, it's urban and it's got a real cosmopolitan mix. You get down to Miami, and Miami is like an international city. It's Cuban, it's Haitian, it's a little bit of everything. So I think a state like that would do well with Andrew Gillum as its leader. I look at Georgia, another former slave state, and I think to myself, how great would it be if Stacey Abrams could win in Georgia? So I'm rooting for Stacey Abrams. You know, I don't have a rooting interest in the Georgia team. I'm just rooting for her. Texas, Beto O'Rourke. I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him. I can't root for Texas, but I can root for him. And I think he'd be good for Texas. I think he'd be good for Texas as I believe that he would be good in general for America. You know, the Sam Cooke once sang, a change is going to come. A change is going to come tomorrow, whether we like it or not. The change can either be a Democratic House, perhaps a Democratic Senate, and a check on this runaway republic. Or people could stay home and we could fuck around and lose it all. It could all be gone. And then we will find ourselves in that funky space that Germany found itself in before the world came crashing down. We can find ourselves in that funky space that the Philippines was in right before Duterte took over. We could find ourselves in that funky, wow, what's going on here, space right before Brazil elected an authoritarian leader. You know, people think it couldn't happen here, but it could happen here. I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher this past weekend, and he had on, you know, a really good panel. And one of the panelists talked about the Nazi rally in the 30s at Madison Square Garden. And we're talking about a garden packed with American Nazis. And we don't really talk about that part of our history, that American Nazism was a thing. Was a thing. Actually, during the same time as Hitler was rising in Europe, American Nazism was a thing. We don't really remember or talk about. I'm sure some people are old enough to have parents or relatives who marched in that Klan rally straight up the streets of Washington, D.C. We don't really talk about the membership numbers of the Ku Klux Klan at one point in this country's history. So the point I'm making is that it's not really a bridge too far. It's not something that can't happen. It's something that hasn't happened. Doesn't mean it can't happen. I haven't been eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex. I haven't been eaten. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Doesn't mean somebody can't go into a lab like they did in Jurassic Park and create a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And damn it, I just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I'm Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, Scooby Snacks. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Just means it hasn't happened. I haven't been abducted by aliens. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Just means it hasn't happened. So when people say, well, you know, you're being hyperbolic about fascism on the rise in America, you're just being dramatic. It's, you know, the libs are the Nazis, are the real Nazis. You know, Trump is just trying to do the right thing. No, it hasn't happened yet. But damn it, if they're not greasing the skids for it to happen. Do you think for a second, if Mitch McConnell keeps the Senate and for some strange reason, the Democrats, I don't know, just like they blew the predictions with this election, with Trump's election, the Democrats don't take the House back. And Trump is suddenly buoyed by the fact that, wow, he still has power. Unchecked power for another 2 years. Do you think for a second they won't double down on the stupidity? They're already locking babies in cages. They're locking babies in cages. They're threatening to shoot people that show up at the border. You know, I talked about this last week in episode 16. I think I need to reiterate it because I just realized how crazy it is. You know, Trump is, they put this really racist commercial on during the football game last night between the Packers and the Patriots. And they put this really, really racist commercial warning about the caravan and how the Democrats want all of these criminals to come in and kill everybody. And they showed this guy who's, you know, really sick person, this really sick criminal mind who happened to be from south of the border, And, you know, this guy was unrepentant and unremorseful about what he thought he would do or what, or the killings that he would engage in. What's never mentioned in that commercial is that this guy came in under the Bush administration. But let's not confuse the world with facts. Anyway, they put this commercial on and, they're talking about this caravan. And I thought to myself, I said, wow, the caravan is 1,000 miles away. And Sunday was also the New York City Marathon. So I just started thinking. I said, well, wait a second. The caravan is 1,000 miles away. Now, the New York City Marathon is 26 miles. The best athletes in the world, the most conditioned long-distance runners, the most highly conditioned long-distance runners, it takes them just about 3 hours to run 26 miles. 3 hours running. And these are peak athletes. They got all the proper nutrition. They got the great training regimen. They're wearing very, very expensive running shoes. They have the right diet, the nutritionist, the trainer. They're at the peak of their athletic conditions in their athletic lives. They're at peak condition. And it takes them 3 hours to do 26 miles. Okay. So if you're walking 26 miles, just walking, not, you know, at a walker's pace, how long do you think it'd take you to walk 26 miles? I mean, on the track, you can probably walk a mile in about 10 minutes, 10 blocks, 10 minutes. That's a pretty good pace, by the way. You know, in New York City, they say 10 blocks is a mile. So you can walk 10 blocks in 10 minutes. That's not a bad pace, a block a minute. So let's see, a mile, 10 blocks, 10 minutes. That's kind of hoofing it. Good shoes. How long do you think it'd take you to walk 1,000 of them bad boys through the jungle on dusty dirt roads, hiding out from the security forces of the nations that you're crossing through, hiding out from people that would do you harm? How long do you think it'd take you to just walk 1,000 effing miles? They certainly won't be here by the time this election comes. I can guarantee you that. There's nobody down there right now. And even when they get here, they're not just going to storm through. They're not rushing through. They're not bum rushing the walls. These people are coming and they're going to throw themselves on the mercy of the country. They're going to beg for political asylum. And you listen to this nonsense. Some of you listen to this nonsense and then you repeat it. You repeat it on the Twitter machine. You repeat it on the Facebook machine. You repeat it on the Instagram machine. You repeat it on social media and you repeat it to your friends. And I've had people, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because I am so sick of and tired of playing stupid people whack-a-mole on Twitter with these. They're not alternate facts. They're just straight up lies. Lies that are being repeated. Lies that are being repeated. Mark Twain said that a lie can get halfway around the world while the truth is just getting its pants on. That's true. These lies get repeated and they become part of the culture. And then you're spending more time trying to defeat this lie than dealing with the truth. And it's harder to convince somebody that they've been lied to than it is to convince them of the truth of what you're saying. This is what I found in my dealings with folks. They put this commercial on yesterday. And today, I guess there was a backlash. And some people are saying that they shouldn't have put the commercial on. They shouldn't have had it on. They should have realized how racist it was. And CNN and other outlets said that they're not going to run the spot. NBC made a mistake. They're not going to run the spot. And I think part of the problem that the big networks are having, and I'm going to say it, and I'm directing this right now, if you're listening, CNN, if you're listening, MSNBC, if you're listening, New York Times, Washington Post, if you're listening, whatever other major publications that are supposed to be the Boston Globe and these other publications, if you're listening, part of the problem with the truth in America, part of the problem with disseminating the truth in combating these lies is that Trump has exposed a weakness in you. And the weakness that you have, especially in the cable news arena, is that you want to be the anti-Fox News. See, Fox News is unapologetic about their bullshit. They lie to you every day. They don't care. They don't care. Because in cable news, and I just learned this, I did my little research. I just learned, apparently in cable news, there's no obligation to really tell you the truth. Only broadcast news. Broadcast news, which is regulated by the FCC. Broadcast news, you cannot just blatantly tell lies on broadcast news stations. So NBC News, CBS News, those places, you know, ABC News, they have an obligation to tell you the truth. But cable's the wild, wild west. And Fox does not give a damn. They will look you right in the eye and lie to you. Their so-called entertainment hosts, their so-called talking heads, opinion heads, they look you right in the face and straight up lie to you. They don't care. They don't give a damn. They just lie. It's okay. It's okay. And they don't have to really, really tell you the truth. There's no obligation for them to really tell you the truth. But what happens on the other networks, like CNN, who's also a cable network, and MSNBC cable network, they feel an obligation to have some sort of journalistic integrity, to tell the truth. And in the process of doing so, they feel this need to both sides it. So they will bring on someone, you know, like in the old model, the old SNL routine where, you know, they had Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd, and they, you know, point counterpoint. They'll bring on one person from one side, another person from the other side, and they sit there and look at each other and yell for 5 minutes, and then they go to break. Because they feel the obligation to show both sides or share both sides. Whereas news used to be, listen, these are the facts. We check with this person, we check with that person. The five W's. Who, what, where, when, why. That was the news. Give you the facts, the details. You make a decision about what happened. But with cable news, you know, it's 24 hours. They got to fill time. They got to talk. So you get a lot of bullshit. You get a lot of opinion. And so when you have that, when you have that deal, when you have the idea of opinion talk and you want to give both sides, then you end up giving sides a platform that don't necessarily need a platform. There was no reason during the 2016 campaign for Trump's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, to have a position on CNN, to be a regular, selling that bullshit. There was no reason for that. There was no reason to have Roger Stone and these other dudes on that network talking bullshit on behalf of Trump. There was no reason to show every one of these insane fucking racist rallies that Trump was holding from start to finish, when you could not see a Bernie rally from start to finish or a Hillary rally from start to finish. You know, they try to give equal time, but what they realized was, hey, wow, people are watching these rallies. Yeah, people are watching the rallies. People watch. If you put some shit on TV, people will watch. Hell, people are listening to this. They're tuned into this. People want to be entertained. They want to be talked to. So, yeah, if you put them on, they'll watch. But what you did was you made Trump legitimate. So now the lies become legitimate. And at some point, the lies like this stupid caravan video become normalized. You see, what's happening with Trump as he's spewing these, I mean, there's no other way. There's no nice way to say these are lies. Man is lying to you. If he tells me my fly is down, I may not even check. If Trump says it, I may not even check. Hey, your fly is open. Please. I'm not looking. I'm not trusting you. I'm not looking. You know, I may be embarrassed later on, but he lies so much. Why would I check for that? So once these lies get out there, they become so normal. We stop being shocked. You know, you reach a level where your shock meter just doesn't work anymore. your outrage meter just doesn't work anymore. Sort of like torture. They say, you know, a person can take but so much pain, and then all of a sudden you're not getting anything. You're not getting any information. It doesn't work. The nerves shut down. The body shuts down. It just doesn't work anymore. That's what this is like. I had a conversation the other day, and I was saying that Trump is like a magician. He's a really good magician. He's a magician in this way. If you watch these big, you know, Las Vegas acts on TV, or even watch, you know, David Blaine and these guys up close, and they show you these amazing tricks, what you have to look for is not what they're talking about. They want to distract you. That's the whole point of a magician. He gets you looking over here. I got my right hand in the air. He gets you looking over here, and then he's doing the trick with the card or the ball or the flower, whatever he's on the other side where you're not looking. Distract you. Let me get you looking over here, and I'm going to trick you right here. That's what the whole administration has been. Been a big magic show. They've had the whole country looking over here, following this, following that. Oh, look at the flash. Look at the explosion. Oh, man, he used some flash powder there. It was great. And then all of a sudden, a rabbit appeared. But what you're not seeing is all the damage being done. You're not seeing all the damage being done. But you got to look. You got to know where to look for it. You got to know where to look for it. I was watching the cable news today. I know I shouldn't be, but I was. And one of the people they had on was a Trump, again, another, they're both sides deal. They had a Trump supporter on, and the person was talking about, oh, well, you know, he's done so much for the economy, and the economy is great, and jobs are the best ever. He's cut all these corporate regulations. And you hear that, you go, yeah, okay, sure. That's the danger. You see the jobs numbers, 250,000. If you look at a real graph and you see job growth from Obama to Trump, you'll see that it's slowing down. If you look at a graph, but in a snapshot, 250,000, oh my God, that's great. Unemployment rate, oh my God, that's great. That's great. It's all great. It is. But that's the trick they want you to see. You see, deregulation is the trick they don't want you to see. You see, when you start deregulating a thing called the EPA, when you start removing corporations' abilities to pollute, you start granting them the ability to pollute the water and the air and the soil. See, that's a danger that they don't want you to see. That's a danger. That's what they've done. They've deregulated a lot of these things, that these EPA safeguards that were in place in the Obama administration and that had been put in place over years to keep things like coal ash from getting in your water. You know, this most recent storm in the South, that came through that did all this damage. One of the things that flooding did in the Carolinas, again, Carolina is home to a lot of poultry farms. And poultry farms, you know, if you're feeding pigs, at some point they got to go. They just do. That's the way it works. Put something goes in one end and it comes out the other end. And they would have these big ponds where they would gather the waste. And they were supposed to be lined to keep the waste from seeping through. But when you put all this water in there and it causes all of that stuff to mix and overflow the banks of these ponds and these containment facilities, it gets out into the environment. It gets out all over the environment. So what happened in the Carolinas? There was massive flooding. And you saw some of the video. You saw some of those pig farms underwater. What do you think is under that water? And now that that water has been mixed, once that water starts to flow hither and yon, it gets all over the place. So now you have highly toxic fecal matter, bacteria, all in the living space of the people that are down there. But there may not be any penalties, because if you deregulate the poultry industry, if you say, hey, man, you don't have to have this sealed in a certain way, or you don't have to have this protected in the event of a storm, hey, whatever, right? Just have to deal with it. It's called the EPA for a reason. It's called the Environmental Protection Agency. What do you think they do? I mean, what do you think they do? What do you think they do? It's called the Environmental Protection Agency. What do you think they do? What's their job? It's in the title of their name. They protect the environment. It's an agency to protect the environment. And if you take the safeguards off of that agency, what happens to the environment? Well, it's no longer protected. The FDA, another agency that's had been deregulated. The Food and Drug Administration. Well, you know, we all eat food. A lot of us have to take drugs, you know, prescription drugs to maintain our lives. You know, I take a pill or two. So now when you're watching those commercials, you ever watch these commercials for the drug commercials, these drug ads? And, you know, that's like, yeah, you know, I mean, and the product sometimes, you know, are for such innocuous problems. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I have a little squiggly line in my eye when I look up at the light. Oh, well, we have squiggyless. We have, you know, we have some product that'll treat your squiggyless. Will treat your squiggly line in your eye when you look at the light. Oh, okay. Well, great. I'd like one of those pills. Okay. Well, fine. You know, just be careful because there's some side effects. And you find out that the side effects of taking squiggyless is worse than having a squiggly line in your eye when you look at the light. That's the problem. I mean, you know, I don't care what they're advertising. It seems like the symptoms, the side effects are worse than what they're treating. Worse than what they're treating. I know Viagra, they say Viagra can make some people go blind, temporarily blind. What's the point in having an erection and you can't see what you're humping? I don't understand that. That's stupid. So, again, the FDA is there to protect us. The EPA is there to protect us. There's Consumer Financial Regulations, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CPFB or whatever. They were there. That was something we fought to get in. And they had regulations. They wanted to regulate the banks to make sure the banks couldn't screw us again. Oh, we're deregulating that. So my whole point is, when you're dealing with a con man, when you're dealing with a huckster, a shyster, somebody selling you snake oil, pay attention to what you're being sold. Pay attention to what the salesman, how the salesman is selling it to you. Pay attention to the product. Pay attention to what you're getting. And if you look at what you get, if you pick up that snake oil bottle and you say, well, what's in it? What are the ingredients? If he can't provide you with a list of ingredients that you can read, you don't need the snake oil. And that's what we got. Snake oil. So as I started this rant talking about sports teams and the people I root for, as I said, I stopped rooting for teams. I started rooting for individuals with compelling stories. You know, I think it's important that we start to identify our own stars, our own heroes, and do what we can to get them elected. You know, compelling stories, people who are really about fighting for you and not fighting for some party ideal, but fighting for you. That's why I like Stacey Abrams. You know, I heard that the right is really upset with Stacey Abrams. Because they say that she's bringing the Hollywood people down there to campaign for her. And the Hollywood elites don't understand us. Why are they bringing Oprah and Obama, these Hollywood people in there? You know, Common, why are they bringing these folks in? And I thought, how hilarious. These are the same people that voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger to be the governor of California. How Hollywood is Arnold Schwarzenegger? These are the same people that voted for a failed movie actor, a B-movie actor, Ronald Reagan, to be president of the United States. Hollywood, Ronald Reagan. These are the same people that voted for a reality TV star. Someone who's described himself as a celebrity. The host of a show called The Celebrity Apprentice to be the president. But because Oprah Winfrey goes down and campaigns for Stacey Abrams, because Oprah Winfrey has the gall to say, vote for your ancestors, make your ancestors proud when you vote. I think that to me was one of the most compelling moments I've seen this whole election season. Again, I've seen Stacey Abrams talk. I've listened to Andrew Gillum. I've listened to Beto O'Rourke, and they're all compelling. But when she said that, I don't know what it is about Oprah. I don't know how Oprah does this. Maybe that's why she's Oprah. When she said that, it kind of struck a chord with me. I was like, wow, you know, she told a story about this man. I forget his name. And I'm going to post the video on Powell to the People, Powell to the Peeps on Twitter, P-O-W-E-L-L, the number two, the letters D-A-P-E-E-P-S, Powell to the Peeps on Twitter. I'm going to post a video of her talking about someone that she knew. I guess she talked about some reverend in the church that she knew, and the reverend had told a story about his father, who, having the opportunity to vote in the South, I believe it was Mississippi, somewhere in the deep South, he got up in the morning, he put on his best suit, his Sunday best, put on his best tie, put on his shoes, and he began early in the morning to walk. He didn't have a car. To walk to his polling place. Now keep in mind, this is the deep South. This is the pre-voting rights, or maybe it was the voting rights. It was the deep KKK Dixiecrat South. I talked about the Dixiecrats last week. They denied the Republicans. But anyway, he gets up and he starts this walk in his Sunday best. Best suit, best shirt, best tie. And he is walking. And it's the South, so you know it's hot. He's walking. He walks for 6 miles. Think about that. I was talking about the marathon a little while ago. He walks for 6 miles. 6 miles. I said it took about 10 minutes per mile to walk. If you're walking at a reasonable pace, if you're walking at a quick pace, it's about 10 minutes a mile. So that's at least an hour. Walking for an hour. That's some people's all whole day's worth of workout. Walk for an hour in the streets, in his shoes, to the polling place. And he gets to the polling place, and they say, no, boy. Nah, boy, this ain't your polling place. Your polling place is over yonder in some other town in Possum Dick. Oh, okay. She didn't say Possum Dick. I said Possum Dick. So, because I don't remember the exact stories or the exact, you know, towns, but I'm rehashing the story. So he walks another 6 miles, 6 miles or maybe further to the next town to the polling place that they told him to go to. He goes. And he gets there. And they say, no, boy, this is not your polling place. Your polling place is, and they give him, they look in the book, and they give him another distant place to go to cast his vote. And after having walked all day, he finally arrives at that polling place because he is determined to cast his vote, to exercise his franchise, to participate in what this country is supposed to be about as a democratic republic. The biggest and the most responsible thing you can do as a citizen of this country is not show your driver's license when you're going to Canada to get some alcohol. No, the most responsible thing you can do as a citizen is to vote. And he wanted to do that. He wanted to be a part of this thing. This land of ours, this country of ours, this country that he helped build and his ancestors helped build. He gets to the polling place and they say, no, boy, you're too late. Polls are closed. Polls are closed. Think about the psychology of that for that individual. He got up, and as I said, he put on his suit, tie, Sunday best. He wasn't going to church. He was going to vote. He dressed because he realized how important that vote was. He understood the sacrifice and the lost lives and the lynchings and all of the suppression tactics of the Deep South that were designed to keep him from exercising his franchise. He put on a suit because he recognized the importance of that. I'll go a step further. I don't know the man. He did exist, and I will, as I said, you know, check the Twitter page. I'll go a step further just because I know people. He put that suit on so that he would not be looked down upon, but would be looked at as an equal, since he was doing something that all citizens should be able to do. He was doing something that all citizens should be able to do. You know, I know Trump is trying to get rid of birthright citizenship. You know, he's trying to say that if you're not born here, or if your parents weren't born here, you can't be a citizen. But this man is a citizen. Citizen. I can't even say it. I'm so mad. Citizen. He's a citizen. And all citizens have an obligation. I mean, we don't do it. We don't do it. I'll be doing it tomorrow, but a lot of us don't do it. Have an obligation as a function of living in this democracy to vote, to choose our representatives. So he put that suit on because he recognized the importance. He put that suit on so that he would not be thought any less than anybody else casting that vote. He put that suit on to show he was proud to be casting this vote. Only to be shit on by people who did not want him to have that right. John Lewis talked about shedding blood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge for those very rights. Got knocked in his head. You know, they tried to beat people to death. They killed other people. They killed those civil rights workers. They killed them. So people died. To go into a booth, punch a few holes, hit a few switches, sign their name. People died for that. And there's going to be people tomorrow who sit home and go, oh, damn, that was today? Oh, wow. Yeah, I was going to vote. I don't know why I didn't. And there'll be some young people going, well, what difference does it make if I don't vote? I don't understand the difference. They won't vote either. They won't vote. Now, my son will probably be listening to this. And I know my mom, his grandmother, will be listening to this. And this is no offense to my mother. Or my father, who also listens. My son probably would not let, and my nephews either, they probably wouldn't let their grandmother or grandfather choose their date night outfits for them. I'm just gonna go out on a limb. It's not even a real big limb. I'm pretty sure about this. They probably would not let them choose their date night outfits for them. I'm gonna say they probably would not let their grandparents choose their dates. I'm going to go out on another limb and say they probably would not let them choose their music playlists. I'm talking to all young people now. I'm talking about my son and my nephews in particular, but I'm talking to you and your sons and your nephews and nieces. And your daughters and your sisters and your younger brothers and siblings. I'm talking to all y'all. You would not let your grandparents choose any of that stuff for you. But a lot of you are going to let your grandparents choose whether or not there's Social Security waiting for you when you retire. They're going to choose whether or not you can stay on your parents' health care till you're 26. They're going to choose that. They're going to choose, young ladies, whether or not you can get the birth control you want and have it paid for by your insurance companies. They're going to choose all that. They're going to choose whether or not the food you eat, whether or not your McDonald's can have glass in it. I'm just going out. That is hyperbolic. But I'm just saying, they're going to choose whether or not the safety of your food is maintained or regulated, the safety of your air and your water, whether or not this planet will burn up, whether or not you'll be dealing with storm of the centuries every other day because the planet is getting hotter. They won't be here. They won't be here for the same amount of time you should be here. That's just the cycle of life. They're not going to be here. By the time you're 80, they'll probably be gone. They'll probably be gone. Unless, of course, we elect some Democrats, and Democrats who believe in science, and they can extend them lives a little bit. But I digress. They'll probably be gone. And you'll have to deal with the decisions they made because you chose to stay your ass home. Think about that. As election eve ends and election day approaches. As I said last week, I hope, and I'm optimistic, that tomorrow, election day, or 2 days after election day, I'll say this week ushered in a change. This week was the first week of actually regaining and stopping the insanity that has plagued our republic. I'm hoping that this week is the week that we send a message to the 40% of us who are okay with fascism, who are okay with a lying ass president, who are okay with babies in cages, who are okay with being white nationalists. I'm hoping that we all send the message to those people that, hey, we are not okay with that. This is not the America we want. And you will not destroy this nation. I'm Tony Powell. You've listened to Powell to the People, episode 17. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to Powell to the People on OG Podcast or iTunes, Stitcher or Google Play. You can also follow me on Comic Tony Powell on Twitter, and you can follow us on the Facebook page, Powell to the People. Thanks. See you guys next week. Thank you.